access number 29556, Mr. Brian Haskell Thomas, Real 3. Now, you just mentioned something there that's quite interesting. I've forgotten. How did you get on? I mean, you were going to be an officer if you passed at Alfred, whichever. What did you think of the officers that were in charge of you on your ship, your first ship, when you were an ordnance?
Pretty good.
How good did you think? What was good about them? In what way were they good?
They were obviously highly trained, highly intelligent, knew what they were doing, and had a degree of humanity in all of this.
And was that a common perception of them? In other words, were they popular amongst the men?
Oh, yes, yes.
Was the ship a happy ship? And could you explain the concept of a happy ship?
Certainly was. When you consider that about 80% of the sailors on the ship had never been to sea in their lives before, which is a big problem for the Admiralty. I can come on to that later. They did set up a scheme, which I can tell you about.
Well, was it a happy ship? What is a happy ship? What makes a happy ship?
Well, really, the approach from the captain downwards through all the officers and the backbone of the Navy, the senior NCOs, most of whom had been at sea for several decades.
So collectively,
there was an empathy.
And this was a happy ship.
Oh, yes.
Now, anything else? Any other stories about her before we leave her?
Don't think so.
So, how long were you aboard her? December 41 to when did you go to the office training?
About 9 months later.
So, September 42.
Yeah.
Now, what was the process of being selected for officer training? You were already a CW candidate.
Yeah.
What happened next?
There was a report from your divisional officer. Each group of sailors had a divisional officer on your suitability or otherwise to go forward to King Alfred for the commission course.
Now, what was that based on? I mean,
well, observation by the officer, I see, and
just as to what character you
were. That's right. Yeah.
Abilities,
yeah.
Otherwise,
I mean,
had any special training as a CW candidate?
Not really. You were one of the chap who did your job and.
No navigation training, though?
No.
You wouldn't get a lot of navigation training.
No, that came in King Alfred,
right,
which was a swimming pool in Hove.
Now, tell me about, what was it? What was the actual place called? It was King Alfred.
King Alfred. And we lived in what would have been the pool of the swimming pool. Had taken all the water out and put accommodation in. Although we had 3 weeks in a private house in Hove, or private houses in Hove, and then we went to King Alfred proper.
And
that was very intense.
So you were in billets. Generally the billets were reasonably comfortable, I presume, both at the swimming pool and the house.
Yeah, the food was appalling.
Why?
Well, each each night at dinner, one of the cadets had to stand up and say grace. And you could tell what the food was like because he said, "For what we're about to receive, good God."
It was that bad?
Mm.
Worse than you'd had on the ship, sir?
Oh, yes.
Now, tell me about the program of training. How do they put you? It's a big program and it's intense.
Oh, yes. We were put in groups. And we covered every aspect. We only had half an hour for lunch and another half an hour to send more signals to each other every day. Because we weren't going to be signaled, but you had to know what it was all about. And then we had to deal with the flag signals.
Now, how have you done this a fair amount by
now? Yeah.
You've done it in the Sea Cadets, you've done it at the Worcester, it was Worcester. And now you're doing it again.
Yes.
You've done it as an ordinary seaman as well. Were you on top of signals at this stage?
Oh, yes, because we always had a competition when I was in Magpie. See who was seeing, who saw the signal from another ship first, the signalman or you? He's calling you.
So you were pretty good at signals. No. Your Morse and
that's right.
Flags were up to standard.
Mm.
Now, what about navigation? Because you'd had this problem with trigonometry.
Yeah. Well, that navigation was very interesting.
Now tell me about that. What types of navigation were you learning?
What they call dead reckoning.
Can you explain that for them?
That is where you start off at a place you know, and then you have a log which tells you how far you've gone, and then you have the sextant to enable you to take a sight to check whether your calculation of where you are is correct. There's no... it was so important, such a marvellous invention.
And did you have any trouble with the maths of it?
No.
No distraction from music?
No, that's right. The only distractions were occasionally they'd put the lights out and hurl a thunder flash in and then throw buckets of water. We'd say, hey, what? This'll be what it's like at sea, old boy.
Any other methods of navigation you were using? Or was it just dead reckoning?
Dead reckoning. There was no GPS in those days. The thing that impressed me most was when 10 British destroyers went up the Norwegian fjords in the dark using dead reckoning. Sunk 10 German destroyers, came out, and nobody ran aground. That says a lot for the navigators. And of course, at that stage of the war, most of the navigators were ex-merchant navy.
So that's signals, navigation. Mm. What else are you learning?
Boat work.
Knots. Again, you've done a lot of that.
That's right.
Anything to learn there?
No, knots and splices.
And your bowline or whatever it was.
That's right. Yeah.
Still up to the fore there.
Yeah.
So seamanship generally.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Anything else you're learning?
Well, towing. Towing another ship. Which is quite an art.
In what way? Explain a bit.
Well, you have to make sure you've got a fairly long tow line. If it's a short one, it could snap very quickly. You've got to have part of it in the water. And be very careful how you do it. Hopefully, we'd get a tug to take a tow. But sometimes it takes a day or two to get a tug out to it.
So that's towing.
And, of course, marching.
Drill.
The discipline again.
And again, this is something you know, I
know. Oh, yes.
Anything else?
Sailing a cutter. 27-foot boat. It was really a lifeboat.
And again, something you've done before.
Yes, right, yes. And the equipment you will find in the ship, fire extinguishers, the importance of the electrics, how to rig what they call a new line of electric cables through the ship. It was a ring main, and you had a spare ring main handy on deck in case the main one had got shot through.
So you actually learned that. Were you learning repair?
Oh, yes. Well, damage control. Absolutely, yes.
I mean, what were the principles of damage control you were using?
Well, you have to assess what the damage is and see if you can handle it until you get back to port. If there's a hole in the ship, you can put what they call a canvas tingle on it, a big sheet of canvas on the side of the ship. The rope's coming over the other side, tighten it, or you can stuff it full of hammocks, as we said earlier.
Or would you do both?
Yep, we could do both, yeah.
What
belt and
fire?
Braces is the key. Fire was a very important thing. It's one of the worst things that could happen to a ship on fire. And we had fire drills regularly at King Alfred, as well as we ultimately did on the ships to which we went.
Anything else in damage control?
Not really. We had a lot of equipment for shoring up bulkheads and that sort of thing, which we practiced. This is what saved the Nottingham off the Australian coast.
Now, so, were you actually taught how to behave as an officer, or was that taken from...
This, after King Alfred, we went for 3 weeks to Greenwich.
Ah, right, I'll come. Anything else at King Alfred then?
No, not really, except we formed a dance band again.
You formed a dance
band? We played in a local hotel. Very rarely, but distraction. But you needed to be able to wind down sometimes.
So there were enough musicians about in those days.
Oh, yes.
Because this isn't the same group of people going
to
play.
Oh, no.
This is different musicians.
That's right, yes. Yes.
And you're always on the drums.
Yeah.
You don't seem to have let it distract you this time. From
no, no, mind. No. Well, it was on rare occasions.
Now, how were you assessed there?
Well, your course officer, each group had a course officer who monitored your progress and would recommend yes or no.
That was all it was?
Mm.
And was there a passing out ceremony?
There was indeed, yes.
Tell me about it.
You had to march up to the captain in charge, salute, shake his hand, take the piece of paper, salute, and march off.
And were you then commissioned?
Yes. Acting temporary probationary sub-lieutenant.
Is that what you...
Yeah. I think it's on the thing I hang in the hall.
So acting temporary probationary sub-lieutenant.
Well, they...
And what was the date you did that? Do you remember the date you commissioned?
I think it must have been early 1943.
So you were there about 3 or 4 months?
Yeah. And then I did another course.
Now, what was the next course?
To be what is called a gunner's substitute. The Navy realised they were running perilously short of warrant officer gunners, people who'd been in the Navy 30 years and really knew everything. And they decided it was better to bring them ashore to train up people and have a quick course for people like myself to take their place.
Yeah.
And that took place at Plymouth.
So this is before or after Greenwich?
After.
Ah, well, we haven't done Greenwich.
Oh, Greenwich. Well, when we arrived, we were ushered into a room and a commander came in and said, you have become officers. We're now going to teach you how to be gentlemen. One chap stood up and said, I was a gentleman before I considered joining this organisation. He was sent outside to put his head under a cold tap. But silly thing to say, really. But anyway.
So you were...
This was officer-like qualities, in effect.
And what were officer-like qualities you were looking for?
Well, how to handle a dinner, how to handle guests, how to deal with your captain, how to deal with your subordinates.
Did you find any of this difficult, or was it just a matter
of... No, really. A lot of it's common sense.
And that was done at Greenwich?
Yes.
Now, tell me about this course. This is a
gunner's substitute. Well, we did a 2-month course on all the things that a warrant officer gunner has to do. A, you're in charge of all the equipment on the ship, which is guns and depth charges, a thing called a hedgehog.
Now, where you did this course at
Plymouth, and of course we went on the...
Was it with any particular establishment or shore station or HMS anything?
Can't trying to remember, but it's the naval base at Plymouth. It did have a name. I can't remember now. It'll come to me. And we also got on a firing range on the coast down there.
And when was this? This was January 43, was it?
Oh, a bit later than that. More like March. I was doing some other odd jobs then, which didn't really... While I'm waiting for a place.
So take me through what you were learning in more detail. Which guns, what aspects of them?
Mainly the 4-inch Mark 16 gun, which in most ships were in twin turrets. And yeah, then, of
tell
course...
Tell me about that gun. I mean, what was the training? What exactly were you learning? Were you learning the full drill?
Yes, yes.
Tell me a bit about the gun.
Yes, how it is laid, how it is run, what does it run on, what sort of types of ammunition it has, where do you keep it, how do you load it, and how many crew on the gun.
What was the gun?
Like most guns, the two senior people are the layer and the trainer. And then you have a hand of guys loading it constantly, kicking the cartridges out of the way. And of course, normally it's controlled from what they call the director tower, which is above the bridge, by a gunnery control officer.
Now, what were you learning? All three of these jobs?
Yeah, all of them.
Sorry, all these jobs?
Yeah, and the depth charges, what patterns?
Hang on. So, so you do every job on the load, from loading to training.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you do the gun and control job as well?
No. That's a separate job on the ship.
So, what was the job of the warrant officer on the 4-inch gun then?
Well, he's in charge of the overall charge of the crews and all the weapons.
In the turret?
Yeah.
Or on the ship?
Yeah, and not just the guns, the depth charges and the hedgehogs.
Now, what did you have to learn about the depth charges then?
Well, how the patterns work, how the depth charge works itself. It's operated by a water pressure pistol, which you set to the depth you're told to set it to before you drop them or throw them over the side.
So again, you were learning it right from the start.
That's right, yes.
We'll come to more about that then.
Indeed.
What about the hedgehog? That was a projector, wasn't it?
Yeah, a frightening weapon. Fired 24 mortars ahead of the ship's line of advance. And the first ship that fired it, they all dropped short and blew the bow off.
Now, was this new then?
It was new, yes.
It's just called the hedgehog projector, wasn't it?
Yeah, hedgehog, yeah.
It had a proper name.
There were 24 spigot mortars.
What did you think of the projector, or should we deal with that when you're in it?
Well, it was only effective if it hit the U-boat. It fired in a sort of elliptical, like the shape of an egg. And we come to that later.
Between on the surface or underneath? One of its things would actually, mortars, that shells would actually have to hit the...
Yeah, they were on B gun deck, behind the B deck twin 4-inch gun.
We'll come to this, I think. Anything else you were learning this as a gunner's substitute?
The electrics of a ship, because you were in charge of the electrics as well. Only, the focal point, you obviously, when you went to a ship, you'd had a team of people doing it all.
So it's quite a long course.
Absolutely, yes.
So you were there, what, March to when?
About August, I think.
Nearly as long as your commissioning course there. Was there any bombing at Plymouth while you were there?
Oh, yes.
What do you remember the air raids?
We used to go out and help the fire brigade.
Tell us about that.
Well, Plymouth was really, like most of the ports, a target. And usually the bombs fell on civilian properties rather than inside the dockyard. Well, the dockyard did have some hits. And we were just helping the fire brigade and sometimes taking emergency pumps on wheels. I can't remember who made those, but you take those to a site and add to the fireman's work, give them a hand.
And what sort of fires were you dealing with? How big?
Some of them were quite big. Some of the fire brigade said, well, there's no way we're going to stop this. It's not in... endangering anything else, let's let it burn itself out. Otherwise, if it obviously was strategic, you would muster every capability you had to try and stem the flames.
Were you required to assist in the rescue of either victims or corpses? Or was that
we didn't have the equipment for rescuing people. No.
Anything else about your time at Plymouth?
It's quite elegant, really. Quite a well established place there for people like myself, officers. You had a wren looking after you, doing your washing and so on.
What, acting as a servant?
Yeah.
So they do what, wash your uniform?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Same was in Greenwich.
And how would you treat them? Would you treat them as... on a formal basis, or...?
Well, really, yes, but you have to bring a bit of humanity into it.
Would they tidy your billet as well?
Oh, yes.
So it's uniform and billet, just like an
officer's... Yeah, like a batman in the brown jobs.
What was the officer's mess like? The wardroom.
Quite elegant.
You have a wardroom, I presume.
Quite elegant.
What was it like? Can you describe?
A very well-run hotel. With, of course, the usual strictures of how you behave and don't have all these boys' games in the wardroom.
Did you have guest nights and that kind of thing?
Yes, usually an admiral or a captain telling you about what he's been doing. But, of course, we're under strict advice not to tell anybody anything that you heard anywhere.
Well, the guests, I mean, in the army, guest nights are an excuse for a booze up, if you want.
We didn't have anything like that.
You still hadn't, you've not got up to your point about...
Bitter lemon, please.
Did you still not drink? Because I know you've got a story about
it. It goes back, really, to my 18th birthday when I was in Cottesmore.
Well, tell us that story then.
I had a sip of everybody's tot of rum, which is the normal practice. I didn't move for 48 hours. They hid me under a pile of duffel coats. And that affected my palate forever. I didn't drink wine until I was in my 30s. And I still don't drink bitters or beer. Spirits or beer.
So that one-off... You
may have done me a favour, who knows?
So anything else about Plymouth? You were there till about August,
2003. Yeah.
Then what?
Then I was sent to a training base near there to give some help in the training of new people joining as sailors.
You know which one it was?
It'll come to me in a minute. I'll tell you later. I'll get my Navy News in a minute. I can look it up. I get it every month. Splendid newspaper.
So what were you doing there? Tell us a bit more about what you were doing. Helping with training.
Yeah. Passing on what... Well, no, just general everything. Passing on what I'd learnt at the various places I'd been.
How long were you doing? Were you just waiting for a posting?
Yeah, that's right.
So what next?
And that lasted until, I suppose, November 43.
So you were in the Plymouth area. So what then?
HMS Magpie, where I stayed for 2.5 years.
Tell us about your posting to HMS Magpie.
Well, I was posted as a gunner substitute. Well, the sailors had a different word for it. I can't remember what that was. And we had about 13 officers in the ship. I was the gunner. And I was in charge of all the...
So you were a gunnery officer, more or less.
Yeah. So I had on my charge all the weapons, depth charge, head salts, guns.
We'll come into that role.
And the electrics.
This is HMS Magpie.
Yeah.
Now, what class of destroyer is she?
Sloop.
She's a sloop.
Mm. Yeah, 1,400 tons, 300 feet long, 38 feet wide, with an open bridge.
And what were your first impressions of her as a ship?
I was quite impressed. I mean, much better than the Cottesmore. More up to date. Brand new. Oh, well, no, she's done one trip across the Atlantic, where she leaked all the way and all the way back, but that's another story.
And that was before you joined her?
Mm.
Now, where did you join her?
Glasgow.
And what was your first impression of joining her as a ship with a crew and a captain and the rest of it when you joined her at Glasgow?
Very impressed. You know, quite a different world to it. The Vimy that I've been on, which was built in 1917, and Cottesmore, which was a sloop, the emergency type of ship. But they turned out to be the most successful anti-U-boat ships in any navy.
You joined at Glasgow. Now, which destroyer flotilla was she with?
She was with Captain Walker's second escort group. Five sloops.
But they operated out of where, generally, or did they move about a lot?
Gladstone Dock, Liverpool.
Now, give us a quick review of the officers of the Magpie, then, from Captain down. It wasn't Walker's ship, was it?
No, right. His was Starling.
Tell me about your first impressions then.
Two regular naval officers, the captain, Lieutenant Commander A. Brahms. We used to call him the Prophet.
A. Brahms,
A-B-R-A-M-S.
What was he like?
Well, very unusual. Could drink a bottle of whiskey and eat in an hour and reach for another one. Only in port, no drinking at sea. He'd been passed over as further promotion to commander, but he was good at what he did. But had
he was a lieutenant then? Yeah.
No, lieutenant commander. And he had a very very intoxicating chuckle. Wore a beard, smoked foul smelling cigars, so could smell when he was approaching the bridge and have a quick look round, see if everything's all right. And then.
Was he a good officer? Did he know his stuff?
Oh, yes, yes. Not the best ship handler, but, that's all in the past. And the first lieutenant was Lieutenant Butchard.
Butchard?
Butch with A-R-D on the end. He was a regular Navy. The navigator was Merchant Navy.
What was Butchard like?
Well, he was very good. He and I shared a watch together until I got my watch keeping certificate. He was very fair.
Good first lieutenant?
Oh, yes, yes.
And you said the navigator officer was?
Merchant Navy. As most of them were in those days.
What was his name?
I can't remember. It'll come to me.
Any other officers spring to mind? Well, what other officers were there?
Well, there was an engineer who was a warrant officer at Royal Navy. There was a gunnery control officer who, like me, was RNVR. Another lieutenant, RNVR, and a confidential book officer who'd been an MP, Labour MP before the war, Oldfield his name was. He shouldn't really have been there. I mean, he's quite old. But he said, "Oh, well, I wanted to do it. I wanted to do something." And he had all kinds of rituals. Glass of port every night at 6 o'clock. Didn't have an operational job, but he was in charge of all the cookbooks. We had a medical officer. All the doctors were straight out of medical school. Chipchase was our chap's name. And they were on an enormous learning curve. I had to help him remove an appendix one night in the middle of the Atlantic.
So that was your... And did you fit in well straight away with these officers?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, except the gunnery control officer who always had to relieve me on watch, and he was always damn well late.
So you weren't so fond of him?
No.